Hello, everyone. My name is Caleb Walgren, and you're listening to Season 5, Episode 20 of Brody Sports Talk. And even though it is Episode 20, let's just say I'm feeling 22 today. Shout out to my homegirl, Taylor Swift. And let's face it, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce may think that they are a power duo, but there is no greater power duo than myself and my co-host Captain Orange, who is of course Derek Rusnick. Derek, how are you doing today?
Hello, everyone. I hope you don't see red for those bad puns that Caleb was putting out there for you. We have officially hit fall, so there is no more cruel summer.
It's okay. We do have a blank space where you can leave a 5-star review. And
can we talk about sports now? Because we're not good at these puns.
They're fantastic. They're excellent. I'm so tempted to throw another one out there, but I'm just trying to let it all go. So
later,
Derek, let's get things started off right. Who is your Brody Spotlight of the week?
So I am spotlighting the women's national team for the game of football. And just a thank you and a cap tip to Megan Rapinoe. So this week after a international friendly versus South Africa, Megan Rapinoe has played her last game. She goes out as has spent the last 17 years on the team and has been the face and the voice for not only the soccer team, but for minority rights, and been an advocate for causes that need to be brought to the forefront. I think that sometimes she's been a little bit of a punching bag, or people have not treated her correctly because of her stances, but she's a great star, and I hope that her retirement sends her off into the next phase of her life, as she's got a lot to offer, I believe, in the coaching world, and helping the next generation of the women's soccer team.
I like where you're coming from, Derek. Shout out to Megan Rapinoe doing her thing for the U.S. women's soccer team. And I did see they won their last match 2-0 over South Africa, and goals by Trinity Rodman and Emily Sonnet. And I saw that that match happened to be in Soldier Field, and that might be the best football match that they see there in Soldier Field for the home team all year long. So you're welcome, Chicago. You at least got something good going for you. Derek, my spotlight is that I am just going ahead. I know we don't really do the power rankings the way that we did previously, but I wanted to go ahead and call out the teams that I believe are currently making up tier one of the NFL. And I am limiting it to 5 teams that I feel are head and shoulders above everyone else. A couple of them did get losses this year, but they were back in week one. So just to go east to west, I'm going to say Miami and Buffalo out of the AFC East. I'm including Philadelphia from the NFC East. And then when I go west, I have Derek's favorite bandwagon / crush team, the San Francisco 49ers. And I'm rolling with my homies. I've got Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs there as well. There's just a level of confidence I have in these 5 teams compared to everyone else. Dallas doesn't seem to know what they're doing offensively under Mike McCarthy, so they narrowly missed the tier, despite the fact that they have an excellent defense. I think that Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott leave room for error. And outside of that, I kind of look through some of these divisions and just go, there's not anyone else that I go, yes, I'm going to, swing for this team. They are so good and so strong and flawless. No, there are some teams that have 2-1 records, but you definitely can tell that it's not perfect, and that's okay. Derek, what do you think of my top five teams? Do you think that this is, do I have them right? Any adjustments that you would potentially make there to tier one?
So I was a little worried because you went to the West and you went all the way to San Francisco. And I was like, is he going to say the Kansas City Chiefs aren't the best team, like, before you get to San Francisco? And then you were taking the West divisions. I don't really have a big issue. I think right on the outside, knocking on the door, I would say the Packers. I mean, I know I'm, you know, blowing smoke into the owner of the team, but that comeback win this last week was really great, and it really showed grit and determination for the Packers. I think they're going to be definitely in the hunt for the North, and so I don't really have a big issue. I think the top three are farther away than the bottom two on your list, but I think Miami, San Francisco, and Philadelphia just have another gear to them, where they are. We're going to see them in the playoffs, and we're going to see them probably make a long run.
I think that's fair. I think it's going to be an interesting year. There's still a lot of games to be played. I mean, we're going into week four. So, by all means, these tiers can adjust. I'll be honest and say I'd love to see my Packers there, but I also think a tier one team doesn't blow a 12-point lead in the fourth quarter the prior week. So, that's kind of where my issue is with that one right now, but I appreciate it. Anytime you're going to tell me good things about my Packers, I'm going to take that. And Let's switch from pro football to college football as we give our take from the wide world of sports. And that is because we always like to compliment and call out when we see great things happening in the world of sports. And the great thing this past week is when the junior safety Haley Van Voorhis for Shenandoah was able to go out and make history in their win this past week, as she was able to get on the field and able to get a quarterback hurry. She is definitely, I would say, undersized comparatively to a lot of the people who you would consider playing safety, but she works hard. She has earned her spot. And I am excited for her and for girls in general to see, hey, if you work hard and you dedicate yourself, you can make it happen. Because, yes, Shenandoah is a D3 school. That doesn't matter to me. They gave her a scholarship. She was able to go out and make a play on the field. And it wasn't that they were just trying to do it for show. Like, they didn't get her out there early in her career. It was because she was the best player to go out there and make a play. And so I love that she earned it. She had her dues, and congratulations to Haley Van Voorhis of the Shenandoah Hornets, as they did get their win this past week against, I don't even know how to say the name of that other school. Hunyada. I'm going to say that I probably butchered that, but they did win 48-7, which is a fantastic score. And just to be clear, she is the first female non-kicker to play in an NCAA football game. So I needed to make sure I called that out, that it was a first female non-kicker, because we have talked about kickers on this podcast making history before, like a few years ago with the Vanderbilt kicker in the Power Five.
Yeah. So someone has to be the first. Someone has to knock on the door, break it down, break the glass ceiling, whatever you want to say. So she puts in the work. It's not about like, oh, we're just going to have somebody from the stands come and, play football. if you've gone out there and you watched the play where she got the quarterback hurry, honestly, it was a good play. It is D3 football, so the quarterback, I'm not sure, knew where he was for the most part, but did get the ball out before before she hit, before she, you know, she could have got a sack if that quarterback didn't see her coming. She had a free run straight to him. But someone has to be the first, and we may not see another one this year, but there could be over the next couple of years. Hey, if you're putting in the work, if you're, if you're practicing, if you are passionate about it, this could lead to other things. I mean, someone had to be the first female to play in a college football game, and this is just the next step. So I'm very proud, and it's a great story.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful story. I'm glad that we are able to talk about it. It's one of the best things about having a podcast is that we are able to go ahead, call out these celebration moments, because if there's one thing I've learned in life, whether it's something that is considered a big win, a small win, it doesn't matter what it is, you celebrate those wins and you keep moving forward. So we wanted to make sure we celebrated and congratulated Haley Van Voorhis for making history. Like you said, Derek, someone has to be the one to make history. And that was Haley. Good for you. Derek, let's switch it up. While we probably could have had Haley as our goat of the week, if we were being honest, but we usually try to stick with the NFL, with either our goat being a positive or a negative thing. It has been pretty positive here because of the good vibes here at Brody Sports Talk. But Derek, who is your goat of the week?
So we went double positive last week, and I think we're going to go double positive this week as well. So the title is Ball Boy Makes Good. You might have seen this week, Mike McDaniels beat the Denver Broncos. I don't remember what the score is or how many points the Dolphins scored, but So the Broncos gave up 70 points. That is the fourth 70-point game in NFL history, and they had a chance to kick a field goal and to get the record of 73, which would pass the previous record of 72. That happened back in 66, but Mike McDaniels called off the dogs or the porpoises and just did the 70. So he was a former ball boy of the Denver Broncos, and he really wanted to play, coach, be part of the organization. He moved on to other things and is now the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Overall, there was 726 yards of offense by the Dolphins, 376 of passing, 350 of rushing. Just a masterful offensive performance. The Dolphins look really good this year. That's why they're in your top five, Caleb. A respectful bow to Mike McDaniel. I didn't like to see it. I didn't like to see that score, but that was fun to if you're not a Broncos fan.
Derek, you know that I love to look at some of these things. Uh-huh. And in general, I know our coaches that we're talking about today they've run into each other before. They've been with Shanahan, with McVay, with different people in the past. Did you know that Mike McDaniel at one point was the running backs coach for the Sacramento Mountain Lions of the UFL?
You know, I really wouldn't put that past him, as you got to get your start someplace. I mean, we've talked about it during basketball season where the head coach of the Miami Heat, Eric Spoelstra, was a video analytics guy and just worked his way up into a coaching position. you know, talent goes places and talent shows. So clearly he's been doing something right.
Yeah, it actually says that he was the running backs coach under Dennis Green. If you remember him for famous rants like "they are who we thought they were." But definitely mad respect to Mike McDaniel. And I'm not telling you any breaking news here, Derek. Maybe they should have given him an interview in the offseason when they hired Nathaniel Hackett. Just saying. I don't think it would have hurt anything.
You know, you don't want to waste anybody's time. Like, what has he done since he's been elsewhere?
That's true. he's just done a little bit of good things. Meanwhile, I'm going to go ahead and go to my guy, Matt LaFleur, who I said was winning with analytics. Now, I do think it's interesting. We're seeing probably more of the true LaFleur offense as he works together with Jordan Love. They've been together there for several years. And, you know, it's no longer the Rodgers offense. Rodgers isn't changing everything at the line of scrimmage. It's the Jordan Love show. And they had kicked a field goal earlier in the fourth quarter. They got the score to 17-9 after a nice Jordan Love scramble for a rushing touchdown. And he said, you know what? We're going to go ahead and go for two. Love the play call. Love the aggressiveness, because the analytics say if you can get it one of the two times, which it is roughly a 50% of the time thing, and you go for it that first time, then you can just kick the extra point the second time to win the game. Not enough NFL coaches take advantage of the right analytics to win the games the way that they should. Also, I'm slightly biased because he did find Samaré Toure on the two-point conversion. Go Big Red. As Toure, of course, is a Nebraska player in the league. And then he threw later in the game his first home touchdown pass when he found Romeo Doubs on a back shoulder throw, and Anders Carlson kicked the game-winning point. I know that it was strange because the Packers were down 17-0 going into the final quarter. You could argue to me that it's because the Packers ended up taking Derek Carr out of the game. I think that it did have an impact. But at the same time, the Saints had held us scoreless for three quarters, and that doesn't stop because their quarterback is hurt. The Packers found a way to come back. Matt LaFleur got the right play calls in, and it was the right choice to go for two to make it 17-11, to where they were able to just get the touchdown and kick to get the win. Derek, did this surprise you, or are you surprised by LaFleur's aggressiveness in this situation? I know we're seeing more and more analytics in the league. I'm probably more on the, if the analytics say it, go for it. But I also know that clearly the result turned out okay in this instance.
Yeah, I don't have an issue. I want to go back to a previous statement that you were saying and kind of give some props to the Packers. This is the Matt LaFleur offense. Jordan Love is running it really well, and I think by the end of this year, we're going to see a bigger, stronger, more robust offense. And maybe something that we haven't seen in a while, you know, LaFleur actually being able to call an offense and those plays working or not working. When it comes to winning with analytics, like analytics are generally based upon, okay, well, the percentage is, you know, 51% of the time this works. Well, that might not be your game that you're in. You might be part of the 49%. But numerically, it puts some pressure on the other team. And that might be the psychological difference that you need so that, oh, well, they only have to score a touchdown and kick the extra point. Okay, well, now we have to do something about it. And that, you know, that changes the arithmetic of the defense. So, yeah, I think it's a good way to go about it. And, you know, they pulled it out in the end, which very proud of them for that.
Absolutely. So that makes two former Shanahan assistants, Mike McDaniel and Matt LaFleur, being our goats of the week. I was very tempted to make a goat sound there, Derek. Welcome. I did not do that to close that segment. It's time to check those stocks, get those tickers out, and let's see who we're looking to buy and sell as we leave week three behind and go into week four of the NFL season. Derek, I think it's interesting. Our buys are slightly related this week. Go ahead and tell us who you are buying.
Yeah, so I am buying all of the stock that the Arizona Cardinals are not going to be the worst team in the NFL at the end of the year. Not only did they win the Cowboy game this last week, they looked good doing it. I will put it out here. Hey, I did not realize Josh Dobbs was going to be able to run that offense, and the defense really has shown up. So good to them. I think there's a lot of other teams, when I say a lot, I'm at least three teams that are going to be worse than them. I think the Cardinals probably get a top five pick. I'm not saying that they're going to, make a playoff run or anything like that. But you know, they're 1-2 right now. You've got the Bengals at 1-2. And then you got the 0-3 teams, the Panthers, the Vikings, the Bears, and the Broncos. So I think at the end of the year, you're going to see the Panthers. And then you also might see the Vikings say in a couple of weeks, we're really not going to be able to compete with the Packers. We're not going to be able to keep up with the Lions. And those close games that we won last year, where we went 11-0 last year in close games, well, now we're 0-3 in those same games. So we're going to need to move on from Kurt. We're going to go get a Caleb Williams or something like that. And just back on the Cardinals, if you go down the worst teams at the end of the Cardinals are the only one-win team with a positive differential. So the Chargers are close. They only have a one-point differential between points scored and points given up. So they're right there on the verge of being 2-1 or being a team that is definitely going to be middle of the pack in their division and middle of the pack in the NFC.
Absolutely. I think that's a great call out, Derek. And if nothing else, it gives a little bit more hope to just how competitive I think we can expect the NFC West to be. I think that Jonathan Gannon starting the season with three former NFC East rivals to go up against, he was able to call a pretty decent defensive game plan, knowing who's on those teams all fairly well. They let the Commanders and Giants slip away from them, but they're not that far off from being potentially a 3-0 team that would surprise us to start the year. Again, I don't know that we're going to sit here and say they should be or they deserve to be, but they're there. Now, when we're talking about Jonathan Gannon, of course, former defensive coordinator of the Eagles, let's talk a little bit about his counterpart on the offensive side, Shane Steichen, who left and became the offensive coordinator for the Indianapolis Colts. They did have a rough first loss of the year at home against the Jaguars, 31-21. You know, you're still getting your offensive footing underneath you, trying to get all those things done the right way. But they have bounced back with back-to-back road wins in their conference, one in their division. Against the Texans, they won 31-20, and against the Ravens, they won 22-19. And somehow, some way, they are standing in first in their division. And again, they're the only team in the AFC South with a positive point differential. At this point, I don't know that I'm sitting here saying the Colts will make the playoffs or the Colts have the look of a playoff team. But this goes back to some of the points that I think Derek and I like to talk about when we're building rosters. Have a backup quarterback that you can trust. Gardner Minshew played over half of the game against the Texans. He went out, won the game that they had against the Baltimore Ravens, beating a previously undefeated team. And in general, like, yes, you have Anthony Richardson, and when you have Gardner Minshew, you can give him time to make sure he can come back healthy and strong. There's no need to rush him back into the fold. Look at what they've been doing in the ground game. Zach Moss has only had two starts, and he's 10th in the NFL in rushing. Like, he's having a great start to the year, and that's not even mentioning, oh yeah, Jonathan Taylor should be coming back potentially soon. And we all know how electric he can be with the ball in his hands. So if they can make this a two-headed monster at running back with Taylor and Moss and really invest in what they're doing on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, I really think that there's at least a chance. And part of that chance, like I said to Derek pre-show, is the AFC South is not looking great. Jacksonville had their opening win, struggled to do anything offensively against the Chiefs, and came out stumbling horribly against the Texans, letting the Texans score like 34 on them. It was a rough game. And then the Titans, oddly enough, may look like the worst team in this division because Ryan Tannehill has lost all of his ability to move. He's a former college wide receiver, and it seems like he moves around about as well as Drew Bledsoe did late in his career, to make a random 90s reference. Derek, what do you think about the Colts being a threat in the AFC South? Do you buy it? Are you lukewarm at this moment? Did I convince you? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so you know who took over for Drew Bledsoe when he couldn't play anymore and he got hurt. Another quarterback that got drafted far too low in the draft. And maybe the same thing is happening in Tennessee. Like, everyone thought Will Levis would be a top five quarterback, and he got picked up in the second round. So, you know, you never know. I'm jumping on that. I'm taking out a personal loan, and I'm buying your stock as well. The Colts are a threat to the AFC South because there's no one who wants it. There's no one who's just saying, hey, we're going to take this division and we're going to run with it. The Jaguars, I don't know what's going on with them. The Titans, you know, no matter how much Derrick Henry runs, it doesn't seem like anything is going on. And so, you know, honestly, one of the best teams in that is the Texans. It surprises me. Yeah, of course, they only have one win, but, you know, so does everybody else. The Texans have really shown that C.J. Stroud was a good pick. So the Colts are a threat to the AFC South because no one is trying to win it. And, you know, why not us? Basically, why not the Colts? So I'm buying it.
Derek, do you mind if I go to my cell and we'll stay
Please
in the NFL
do.
Before we jump over to the college game?
Please do.
All right. So there is a team that I've made a slight reference to earlier when we were talking about Megan Rapinoe playing at Soldier Field for her final game. And that is, of course, the Chicago Bears, who play their home games at Soldier Field. Derek, they are 0-3. They are one of the worst offenses in the NFL, as they've only scored 47 points through three games, a lot of that in garbage time. And they have the worst point differential in the NFL at negative 59. Now, you have to almost be surprised by that, Derek, because negative 59 is a lot. And we've seen some teams that had a lot of points scored on them in 1 week, but it's actually the Bears that have the worst point differential in the league. They've now lost three games this year to start the season. They have lost 13 games straight now because they lost 10 to end last year. And their last one was actually on October 24th of 2022 over New England, 33-14. Their upcoming schedule, they face the Broncos. They have a Thursday night game against the Commanders. They come back, host the Vikings, host the Raiders, and then finish the month at the Chargers. This is a bad team, Derek. I'm selling that they will win a game all month, even though they're playing a group of teams that are not known for having a bunch of wins amongst them right now, just because I think the Bears are not well coached. They are not well organized. They don't have a good general manager. They don't have good play calls. Like, there is a lot of things that the Bears are doing wrong. Derek, you know I like to look at advanced stats every now and then, like the DVOA that's over and around. They have the Bears as the worst team in the league, and they have them with the 31st best offense and the 31st defense.
Sounds like a winning team.
Oh, actually the 30th defense. My apologies.
Oh, so, yeah, get it right.
So close. It's quite pathetic. But that's what we're talking about right now when we're talking about Bears football. There's not a lot of positive things to look for.
I mean, that's why you're selling them. I mean, that's why we have the stock watches. We're not, you know, we don't do the puts and all that kind of stuff. I want to sell the Bears as well. Of course, they're going to lose to the Broncos. The Commanders look better than they usually do. The Vikings, well, someone's going to have to win that game, and I think it's going to be the Vikings. The Raiders, no matter how much I hate them, I think they're a pretty decent football team and definitely better than the Bears. And then the Chargers. I'm sure those analytics that say the Bears are going to lose that game, and Brandon Staley has already looked at those and knows that he's going to win that game.
I mean, Derek, right now, if I look at the NFL draft order, they are projecting the Bears to have the first and the fourth pick in the draft. Do you have any thoughts on, like, if the Bears are moving on from Justin Fields, what they might be thinking about? Because I did kind of hint about the college game a little bit earlier.
Yeah, so everyone says that the presumptive number one overall pick is going to be Caleb Williams. And I said it earlier when I was talking about the Vikings, that they may give up on the Kirk Cousins as a certain New York team needs a better quarterback. And the Vikings may say, hey, we're just going to go ahead and shutter this year and trade their Kirk Cousins to the Jets to get who, I mean, I've watched him in college at two different schools, and he's a great quarterback, and that's Caleb Williams. But for me, I am selling not his professional career, because he's going to have a great professional career, I think, but his Heisman hopes this year. Now, there's a couple of different reasons behind that. First, we haven't had a repeat Heisman since, I think, 75, when Archie Griffin did it. Two, they're in the Pac-12, and all those games are after dark. And the team that he is on is not a real great team when it comes to closing out games. Now, Lincoln Riley used to coach at the University of Oklahoma. This is not sour grapes against him, but he took all of the same coaching staff that he had at Oklahoma and took him to USC and really didn't improve on anything beyond that. Alex Grinch is still the defensive coordinator. And so there's going to be closer games, and there's going to be games that you're going to have to go out here and win with offense. Now, that should sound great. There is a great hope for putting up more touchdowns or more yards, and okay, look, I'm gonna have more, but he's gonna lose games. In the end, he's not gonna be able to score 40, 50, 60 points every single game. They're gonna lose games, and what happens with Heisman hopefuls is when their team starts losing games, and they're losing more than one game. Frankly, two games is too much. You're no longer a contributor to the team, and you're no longer the best player on the team. I think they're going to lose a couple of games. The Pac-12 is going out with a bang. Let's put it that way. And if I'm going to put my money on anybody, it's probably going to be Michael Penix out of Washington. Yeah. And so if you're going to have a Pac-12 pick, you're looking there. I mean, there's a great receiver at Ohio State. There's a real fun player in North Carolina. A great story out of Notre Dame, which everyone gets to see them whenever they play. And Sam Hartman is just getting all the praise and all the love, and is running a really good offense. So I just think it's a bridge too far for Caleb Williams to repeat as Heisman. I think he should just like go ahead and shut it down. You're going to be the number one pick and move on to your next career.
I think that you could very well be right, Derek, especially. So I pulled up USC schedule. If we want to talk about it and the Pac-12 down the stretch. So let's go mid-October, because that's when they have their stretch get really hard. It goes at Notre Dame, home against Utah, which we know Utah has been like Lincoln Riley's kryptonite out there.
Really has.
Then they get at Cal, home versus Washington, and at Oregon before they close versus UCLA. Colorado and Arizona are before that. I'm not going to sit here and say those are easy games, but those are easier games than, I mean, Notre Dame really impressed me against Ohio State the other night. I think if you're going up there to South Bend, they're only going to be getting better and better, especially with their defense. And I think what you said, especially if it's late in the year, whether it's Michael Penix Jr., or let's say Sam Hartman has a great game, or Bo Nix, all of those players are players that would be considered Heisman hopefuls as well. So not only if USC loses, but let's say they lose fairly badly, Caleb Williams and USC just end the season poorly.
Yeah,
I like where you're coming from.
Let's just talk about the games played thus far. So just last weekend, USC played Arizona State. They beat them 42-28. Well, we have direct comparison to a team that is not going to go to a bowl game this year, and how they played Arizona State. Oklahoma State beat Arizona State 27-15. So the defense I'm just self-deprecating humor here, a really bad Oklahoma State team only gave up 15 points to that Arizona State team, and USC gave up 28 to them. So you're in trouble. I'm just USC is in trouble when they get to the Oregons, when they get to the Washingtons. There's going to be some points scored on them.
And when they get to teams that play defense like Utah, like it's just, it is not going to be a good year. And let's face it, even Bryce Young didn't get to get Heisman's back to back as a sophomore. So yeah. I don't think we can expect Caleb Williams to come back and all of a sudden blow all of our minds that way. I like where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the pros though. Let's talk about our Thursday night game, because we do like, for those of you who listen early, to get a little bit of a taste of Thursday night football early in the week. And the matchup this week is between 2-1 NFC North rivals and the Detroit Lions and the best team in football, the Green Bay Packers. And Derek, we always like to pick a matchup to watch here. What matchup are you looking at?
Yeah, so I am looking at offensive coordinator for the Lions, Ben Johnson, versus defensive coordinator for the Packers, Joe Barry. Joe Barry is allowing 20.7 points per game, so around 21. And Ben Johnson is taking, let's say, instead of giving up, he's taking 24 points a game. So you're expecting a between 21 and 24 point stand. Packers have had some injuries, and even though their offense looks really good, Ben Johnson has wowed some people with his offensive, how astute he is at calling an offense, calling a play, a game plan, and how good Jared Goff has looked. So I want to see where the chess pieces fall when it comes to that offense of the Lions versus the defense of the Packers.
I like where your head's at. I'm picking a match within that chess match, if you will, mm-hmm. as I did watch the Packer game on Sunday. As a good Packer owner, I had to sit down and try to catch as many snaps as possible. And it was a very interesting contest. One of the things that felt good to me is that Rashawn Gary, who did not play very much in the opening game against the Chicago Bears, came out and had 3 sacks in the contest mm-hmm. against Derek Carr and Jameis Winston. He was one of the ones who was really disrupting the Saints offense. And when he is on and he's getting sacks, he's someone to keep an eye out for. You know, if David Montgomery is still hurt and banged up, they can't necessarily use him off the edge. They do like Sam Laporta quite a bit, who can block and catch, but I think that his catching ability might be something that they want to value in this contest. So I don't know that you're getting a lot of extra chips against Gary in this game, because I know that that's usually what you would go to in that overall chess match. But Penei Sewell is there at left tackle, but most likely he'll be going against Matt Nelson. Being the left outside linebacker, he'll line up against the right tackle. And I just don't have a ton of confidence against the Sewell-Nelson combo to be able to go out there and just slow down their opponents and be able to take care of business. Actually, I'm looking, since the Falcons game, they actually put Matt Nelson on IR. So they're even down further, and they might be going to their 5th-round pick from this past year, Colby Sorsdal, which I don't claim to know a ton about him, but if you're coming in as a 5th-round pick and probably getting your first NFL start, you probably don't want it to be against a guy who had 3 sacks and have 4 days to prepare. Those odds do not match up well. Derek, I know that you were talking about Johnson and Barry. Do you think that this gives Barry any chance at having a little bit more of an edge in that chess match because of his just added skill and strength and just being able to go out there on those pass rushing downs?
Anytime that the pass rushers can pin their ears back, as they like to say, I give them a better shot than not to get to the quarterback or disrupt what is going on. I like Penei Sewell. He's a really good player, a fun story, a fun guy to watch. But Rashawn Gary is a handful, let's put it that way. And I'll give it a coin flip when it comes to who's going to win that. But I think in the end, a coin flip leans toward the defense because the offense has to play perfectly to get past the defense. And so I'm probably going to give that one to Rashawn Gary, even if he doesn't show up in the stat line.
I think that's fair. It'll be a fun matchup to watch the Lions and the Packers on Thursday Night Football. Speaking of the Packers and matchups, Derek, I think it is time for us to exchange some high fives and handshakes and move over to our Brody bets for this past week.
Yeah.
Take it away, Derek.
Yeah, so this last week, because of me getting the extra wild card, I went 3-3 because the one that has been hanging around for quite a while, my wild card one of Colorado at Oregon and taking the over of 69.5, well, there was only 48 points scored, and so I did not get that one. But I did get the Broncos over 47, so they clearly went over 47 in that game. And a overtime game, Florida State minus 2.5 over Clemson. I was expecting a much bigger score on that, 10, 12, 15 points. And they went to overtime and kicked a field goal. And then the Dallas Cowboy, Arizona Cardinal, over 43, barely squeaked by with a 44. So got me 3-3 on the week. And the high five handshake goes to Caleb, who won the week of at 3-2. He had the under 47 with his Cornhuskers and Louisiana Tech. They scored 42 points altogether. He had his favorite, the minus 6.5 of the Bills versus the Commanders. They easily won that one. And his wild card, he had the under of 56 on Ole Miss and Alabama. They only scored 34 points there. So a winning record for Caleb. And he does win the high five of the week. So we start in college, and I don't really have anything for college for my Oklahoma State Cowboys because they're on a bye this week. So we're going to say bye, bye, bye to them, and we're going to move over to Nebraska. So the Nebraska Cornhuskers plus 18 versus going up against Michigan. So the number is 18, and the over-under is 40. Caleb, what you got with your Cornhuskers versus the Wolverines?
So definitely an intense matchup. I don't love the spread on this one because I do feel like, could it be two or three touchdowns? Yes. I double-checked what Michigan has done this year as far as their schedule is concerned, and they've really been shutting people down. Now, granted, I don't know that any of those teams are as good as Nebraska is. That might be me being a little bit biased, but that also might be East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, and Rutgers. So the fact that the most they've given up this year is 7 is not a lot of points. Michigan's typically getting into the 30s. I'm going to go ahead and say if Michigan's used to getting to the 30s, I think that this game ends up being somewhere a little bit over 40. I think that Nebraska is going to find a way to get a couple of touchdowns there at home, and that Michigan is going to be able to go out and score the way they want to score. Even if it's like a 21-20 final, which I would love. Either way, I'll go ahead and say Michigan over 40 against Nebraska.
Yeah, that's where I would go as well. I don't like that number 18 because I think Michigan could score more than that. But I definitely think the over is the right play. So as we talk about our NFL teams, and I will start out because we talked about them a little bit before, but we have Bronco Country. The Denver Broncos minus 3.5 at the Bears. So I'm guessing the going to Chicago is definitely going to be a little bit of a, I don't want to say a shock because they just came from sunny Miami and getting blown out there. I think they're going to come back with a purpose. And versus a really bad team that could easily get the number one pick, I'm taking the Broncos minus 3.5, as I think this is the Sean Payton revenge tour. We're going to get our first win kind of game.
I like where you're coming from. I want you guys to beat the Bears in the battle of which NFL team wears navy and orange the best. So as we go over and north to that Thursday night matchup for my beloved Cheeseheads, where all I need is love. It is a currently, when we had written it down, it was listed as an even matchup. And the over-under on this one was 46. I'm just going to go ahead and take the Packers to win. So I'm just going to say that they find a way, they win versus the Lions, and that's all that they have to have. There's been reports that Christian Watson and Aaron Jones could potentially be back for this game. That makes me excited. So I'm just going to go ahead and say that the Cheeseheads are going to get it done for me at home. Go to 3-1 and get ready for some Packer rest, because that Thursday night turnaround is fast. But then they have a Monday night one following that. So a long time between Thursday night and Monday of week 5. So go Pack go, and then rest Packers rest, because I know Derek's going to want them to win that follow-up game. You'll make sure to catch that next week in Brody Bets.
Of course. Yeah. So let's just go ahead and stay in the NFL before we move over to college. So why don't you talk about your favorite there, Caleb?
So my favorite this week is the Sunday night football matchup. Travis Kelce might be the archer. He goes out there and shoots his bow into the sky as part of his celebrations. And I'm going to go ahead and take Kelce, Mahomes, and the Chiefs -9.5 against the Jets. They're playing with some ferocity. They really went out and embarrassed the last two offenses they played, giving up 9 to the Jags and then giving up 10 to the Bears. So I don't see Zach Wilson's offense finding a way to do much better on that. We wish this was the Mahomes-Rodgers game that always seems to elude us, but it's not. So Chiefs -9.5 on Sunday Night Football as the Jets get embarrassed again.
Yeah, I think the Jets have to do something at quarterback soon. Either that or just toss this season into the trash. I'm not sure exactly what is what they're gonna do with this season. So if you've listened to our podcast in the past, and I have a certain love-hate relationship with certain schools. And those schools are directional Michigan schools. There's a Michigan school for every direction, and sometimes even for other directions that you didn't know existed. Like state. I didn't know that state was a direction, but there's a Michigan state. That's a direction, right, Caleb?
I mean, it's the status of Michigan. It does exist.
Okay. Well, that being said, I'm going to jump on a directional Michigan game. We have Central Michigan and Eastern Michigan playing each other. Central Michigan is favored by 7.5 points, so over a touchdown. I'm taking those Central Michigan, the Chippewas, I believe.
Yes.
I forgot already. The Central Michigan Chippewas -7.5 against Eastern Michigan. That's going to be my favorite this week. So moving from the favorite to the underdog, I have a special place in my heart for the Baylor Bears. They are Oklahoma State has had a long time, you know, played them every year in the Big 12. And I just love to, I love to hate them, but I love to love them as well. They beat Oklahoma State a couple years back in the Big 12 championship game. And this week I'm taking them when they're headed down to Central Florida, Baylor +11.5 points. to cover. I think that Baylor has a better team than the 11.5-point spread it is. I think they're going to keep it close. Even if they lose, I think it's a one-possession game, maybe a 7-point or 10-point game. What about you, Caleb? Where's your underdog?
My underdog is also in the Big 12 this week, going with a big-time, big-profile game, as I'm going down to Texas, and I'm saying Rock Chalk Jayhawk, as I'm taking the number 24 in the nation, Kansas Jayhawks, plus 17 on the road against Texas. I think that this is a bit of a potential trap game for the Texas Longhorns, as this is their matchup right before the whatever the Red River game is called now, because it Red River Shootout, Red River Rivalry, Red River Cotton Bowl Classic, whatever. I feel like they've changed the name of that thing 972 times. But I'm going to take Kansas because, one, it's fun to pick Kansas against Texas. They've had some recent success against them. And I just don't like Texas. So if it means that Texas is going to slip up and struggle, I'm definitely for it, as I'm taking the undefeated Kansas Jayhawks, who are 1-0 in conference play, to beat. Well, not necessarily to beat, but to cover that plus cover 17 against Texas. I'd love it if they beat them.
Yeah, okay, Lance Leopold has got them Jayhawks buzzing all around, and I'm jumping on there with you. Rock Chalk Jayhawk. So to finish out my Brody bets, I'm going to go to the Ducks, quack, quack, as I have Oregon going to Stanford. The Cardinal and that tree-looking dude, I just don't think that the Stanford has the dudes anymore. Christian McCaffrey and Andrew Luck are long gone. And so Oregon, minus 27.5. After what they did to the Buffaloes, I'm taking Oregon minus 27.5. This is just, I think this is an easy, easy win for me on my card.
I like it. The Cardinal are not that good of a team anymore, unfortunately. This is one of the easier matchups for Oregon. And I expect Bo Nix to go out there and have himself a Heisman-esque type day, putting up major stat lines. Meanwhile, I'll take us to the NFL for my final wild card, Derek, as there is a matchup between two of my Tier 1 teams. I think that there is going to be a lot of points scored, a lot of yards ran for, and a lot of yards caught for. It is going to be points-a-palooza in Highmark Stadium in upstate New York, as the Dolphins face the Buffalo Bills. The over on this game is 53.5. I'm going over. The Bills have, in back-to-back weeks, been in the 30s. The Dolphins scored a lot more than that last week and are the highest scoring team in football through 3 weeks. So I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, give me the over on this game. I feel good about it. Make sure to say Devin Achane. There was a name correction for him. It's not Achane. It is Achane. So I got to make sure to get that shout out here for him, because let's face it, Miami has scored 130 points through 3 weeks. That is insane. They're going to keep it going. I'm not sure how high they'd have to set this over under for me to be like, yeah, that's a little ridiculous, I'm going to take the under. But I think it would have to be somewhere in the 60s at least. So 53.5, I feel very good about.
Yeah, I think that either one of those teams could score 53.5, and I would not blink an eye, probably.
Exactly. Just one of them.
just one of the teams. Both of them could score 53.5, and we would have the Texas Tech OU game from a few years back, where Patrick Mahomes and Baker Mayfield went back and forth and it was like in the 60s. Both teams were just tossing touchdowns. So I could see Josh Allen doing some Tua and throwing Diggs open or whatever. I could definitely see that.
Yeah, it's just going to be a fun one. I really hope that as many people as possible get to see that matchup, because if Buffalo doesn't get it, they go to 0-2 in the division and two games behind Miami. So Buffalo's, if there's not a must-win game, but Buffalo needs it. And that's really all that we have here for this episode of Brody Sports Talk. So we already mentioned it earlier. If you have feedback for us, you can call us out on Twitter or X at Brody Talk, which is BRODIETALK. And you can also find our link tree as well, which is linktr.ee/BrodyTalk. And make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a single episode of our podcast. We have a lot of fun with it each and every week. But on behalf of my fabulous co-host, Derek, my name is Caleb, and we are signing out. Later, y'all.
Bye, guys.